Blog Talk Radio.
An all-access football exclusive.
An NFLDraftBible.com exclusive.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest. It is 25 days, 9 hours, and 30 minutes until the NFL Draft. Can you feel it? I know I can. Good morning, Rev. How's it going this morning?
Hey, we're featuring linebackers. We're featuring hybrids this week's serving. I'm sorry. So let's get to it.
How about you, Justin? How's everything going over there in the state of Michigan?
Everything's going good.
All right, great to have you guys on again. Like I said, only 25 days until the NFL draft. This thing comes faster and faster every year. And, you know, and it's coming a little bit faster this year in part because it's starting a couple of days earlier. No more Saturday format. The NFL has announced this week that they are having a red carpet affair for prime time. So, you know, Rev is going to have his special collar and outfit for the red carpet there to go on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Fans, if you want to get in there in person, you can begin lining up at 10 p.m. on Wednesday, April 21st, a day ahead of time. And believe me, people will be there. We've been there before during that time, the night before, and it gets packed pretty quick. And so far we have confirmed Ndamukong Suh, Gerald McCoy, Russell Okung, Derek Morgan, Trent Williams, Dan Williams, Eric Berry will be there among the people invited. And, you know, we're still waiting on other 16 invited altogether. We have not heard yet officially if any of the quarterbacks, I'm talking Clawson, Bradford, Tebow, and McCoy, if they will be in attendance or not. Other big news, guys, this week is Mr. Rob Gronkowski. I know somebody me and Rev are both big fans of, and, you know, on the positive side, he had a pretty good showing at the pro day. He ran a 4.65 40-yard dash at 6 feet 6 inches. That was running with the wind, a little slower against the wind, with a 33.5-inch vertical, a 9-foot 11-inch broad jump, 4.47 short shuttle, and 7.18 three-cone. But there was also a report this week from Mike Mayock of the NFL Network that Rob Gronkowski may have a bigger issue in terms of his health concerns than we originally thought. We all know he missed last year with a back injury, and according to Mayock, he's reporting that he's suffering with spinal stenosis, which is a potentially career-threatening condition. Although Gronkowski, you know, was quoted in the Arizona Wildcat as, "That's news to me." So he's completely denying this. Rev, I'll start with you on this one. You know, what's the bigger impact this week, that he looked healthy and looked good in the pro day, or this potential medical report?
I think the potential medical report is what has to worry a lot of people out there, a lot of talent evaluators, and Gronkowski himself. You know, spinal stenosis isn't the most serious condition in the world. I mean, I know I have it, and I'm walking around, and I can run and jump, but I'm not playing football. So really, it really comes down to the doctors. Maybe he's going to have to see two or three or four different doctors to really get a handle on, you know, this type of condition that he has and how serious it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rev, you know, sometimes I disagree with you and we go back and forth, but I don't try to, you know, crack you in the back when you say something I don't like, you know. It's definitely something that, yeah, it's a major difference if you're just, you know, regular Joe Schmo, as opposed to being on the football field with head, especially, you know, tight end. You're not only dealing with, you know, being on the line of scrimmage and you know, head-on collisions when you're staying on the line and blocking, but then when you go across the middle of the field, you're almost always exposed to a big hit when you go for a catch. So definitely, but once again, you know, this is this hasn't been validated. We're not sure what exactly the truth is. This is something Gronkowski's denying. Justin, what's your take on this whole week with Mr. Rob Gronkowski?
Well, I think the biggest thing as far as medically, I mean, he's going to get checked out. The NFL doctors, and if they clear him, Then it comes to what he did yesterday as far as his pro day, as far as did, performed well. And I think he can catch the football well, and he's a guy who definitely can be a second-round type pick if everything checks out medically. So I think the doctor is going to be able to clear him medically. He'll be a guy who's going to be a second-round pick.
All right, folks, and this is our linebacker special show, and we're going to move in that direction now. We're talking inside, outside. We're talking hybrids, 3-4 defense, 4-3 defense. We got it all for you today as we break down the linebackers. And, as we're getting closer and closer to the draft, we've gone through the entire offense, the front part of the front seven, and now we're moving on to that second level of the defense. So we're going to start with the hybrids and the 3-4 guys. That is the text song. If you didn't know before last week, you learned about it when Lamar Houston was on, and we're playing it this week for one of his former teammates, Sergio Kindle. Justin, I'll throw it to you first. Is Kindle the best 3-4 outside linebacker in this draft, and how high do you think he could go?
I think definitely he's the best as far as linebacker, hybrid type guy in this NFL draft. He's got everything you want as far as the size, the speed, the athleticism, the ability to just rush the passer. Now, he did play defensive end and outside linebacker there at the University of Texas, but he's got everything as far as that you want there in that hybrid position. And I think where he fits in to me is number 12 to Miami Dolphins. I think that's how high he could go because, they're always looking for pass rusher. Obviously, Joey Porter, they released him, so he could definitely come in and be a fixture in that defense. Jason Taylor's a free agent. So to me, they're looking for an outside linebacker. They fixed their as far as inside linebacker position in free agency, signing Dansby. I think he goes 12 to the Miami Dolphins.
It's a little higher than I expected. Rev, what's your take on Kindle, and do you think he'll go top 15? Who knows? Could he go top 10 even?
Well, I think, number one, he's definitely top dog among the hybrids out there. I have him going somewhere in the 15 through 20 range. In my latest mock draft, which was about 3 weeks ago, I had him going 19th to the Atlanta Falcons. But is it far-fetched for him to go 12th? No, it's not. But I have him going through, in between 15 to 20. When it comes to Kindle, I think that he's shown you that he has the speed, the fluidity, the loose hips to make an impact in the NFL. He's got that lethal first step. He uses his hands to shed blockers. He could set the edge versus the running game, and he can drop back versus tight ends. He just needs to develop a wider array of pass rush moves. But other than that, this guy's got it all. He's got the size and the athleticism, and he's definitely the top 3-4 outside linebacker in this draft.
Well, guys, let me throw it out there. Rev, you can answer first. Any concern, as a junior, 10 sacks with Brian Arakpo on the other side last year, when he was the man, so to speak, and stepping up as the main pass rusher, we saw those numbers drop off to 5.5. He had more tackles for a loss, more overall tackles, but any concern in his drop off in production as a pure pass rusher in what is a pretty pass-happy Big 12 conference?
No, I'm not going to dwell on the numbers too much. When you're talking about Kindle, you're talking about a guy who's versatile. He's performed at a variety of different roles. He's done it at linebacker. He's done it at defensive end. And he's performed in big games. Maybe he doesn't have the gaudy stats, but I've seen enough of him to know that this guy could definitely make an impact at the next level.
And Justin, how about his size? Only 250 pounds. A little concern about how he handles shedding blocks, getting close to the line of scrimmage. Does that concern you at all in his size in terms of being a prototypical 3-4 linebacker? Does he need to get bigger?
No, I think he's fine at 250 pounds because he was able to show that ability to do that at the University of Texas. I think the biggest thing is he's going to be a guy who's going to be that upfield guy, pass rusher, who just goes ahead and attacks the quarterback, and that's what he needs to be able to do. And at 250 pounds, as playing outside linebacker on a 3-4 defense, he's going to be okay. I think he'll fill up. He'll probably end up about 260 when it's all said and done. But I think he's right there being an impact player at the next level. True, I agree definitely with Rev. I'm not so concerned about, as far as his drop-off in production. I think he's going to be able to go ahead and be an impact player at the next level.
All right, how about the next guy? The next level of hybrid Kindle is less of a hybrid because he actually played more linebacker at Texas than he played defensive end. But the next two guys played mostly defensive end at the college level, two seniors, Jerry Hughes out of TCU, Ricky Sapp out of Clemson. Justin, we'll throw it back to you. Who's the next best guy after Kindle?
Well, I like Jerry Hughes there from TCU as a guy who can, you know, I think he's a better athlete as far as overall athlete than Ricky Sapp. And Ricky Sapp was a guy who I was really kind of higher on, and he's kind of dropped down as we've gone through this this process and watched more film on him. And as far as also, you know, didn't have a wow type combine or pro day. And Jerry Hughes just showed as far as fluidity and his hips be able to drop, and a guy who could just do it all. So I really like Jerry Hughes out there at TCU. I don't think he's a first round pick. I think this guy's going to go, you know, early in the second round type, you know, that type of where he is. And same with Ricky Sapp. I think they're both in that same type of second round type thing, but I like Hughes better than Sapp.
Hey, Justin, I know during the year you felt strongly that Hughes should stay as a defensive end. You know, you mentioned him looking good in the drops at the combine. Are you warming up to the idea of him playing backer?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the biggest thing, was just watching him at the combine, showing his heat, you know, his hips, and be able to drop into coverage. I mean, I still think he could be a 4-3 defensive end, kind of in that Dwight Freeney, just this type of speed type pass rusher. He's not going to be able to do a great things against the run, but as a third down guy, it was, you know, come in and be an impact player, because he's a guy who can really get after the quarterback. So, you know, if you get him, if he's you, as far as the board type starts falling there, and he's the best available guy, and you're a 4-3 defense, I can see his 4-3 defense, you know, taking him and saying, hey, we're going to play him as a defensive end, as a pass rush type specialist, that guy. Maybe if, like, Indianapolis in the second round looks for another defensive end, I could see them, you know, he fits that Tampa 2 type defense at a 4-3. But I think he's going to ultimately go with a 3-4 defense. And I, like I said, I think he's shown the ability to drop into coverage, and that's what you need to be able to do it, you know, playing in that 3-4 defense.
All right, Rev. Jerry Hughes or Ricky Sapp, which direction are you going? You staying with Hughes?
Yeah, I'm staying with Hughes. You know, much like Kindle, Hughes uses that explosive first step as a weapon in rushing the passer. He may not be as tall as Kindle, but he's just as effective using his leverage and his hands to defeat offensive tackles, is strong enough to make plays on the straight bull rush. The only part of his game that worries me a little bit is the way he defends the run. He's going to have to improve under that aspect, but what was really promising in the combine is just watching him drop back. He looked very fluid. His technique was very good. He kept his head down in his back pedal. So that's very encouraging. And as far as Ricky Sapp goes, he's got the size and the physical tools, but he lacks the instincts to be dominant. And that worries me a little bit about Ricky Sapp. So I want to go Jerry Hughes here.
Well, Rev, let me ask you this. Justin mentioned he doesn't see Hughes as a first-round pick, more of a second-rounder. Would you be tempted, you know, if you're a team looking for that 3-4 outside linebacker, Kindle's off the board, you're picking somewhere in the 20s, would you consider taking Hughes there, or is that too high?
No, I don't think it's too high. You know, if you're picking anywhere, you know, from 25 down in the first round, he's definitely an option. You know, I don't see much difference between Kindle and Hughes except the size. Kindle is a bit of a bigger guy, maybe 3 or 4 inches taller, but I think he's definitely an option if you're picking late in the first round.
Yeah, I know you guys aren't always big on the stats, but, you know, the lack of production from Ricky Sapp to me is a concern. He's somebody that came in very highly touted at Clemson, had 4 sacks in limited duty as a true freshman, and then he averaged, you know, he only had 12 the next 3 years combined. So he never really improved on that average that he showed as a freshman. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to read you a quote from when I interviewed his head coach, Dabo Swinney, a couple weeks ago. He said he's a hybrid. There's no doubt about it. I think that's one of the things that makes him marketable. He can run. He's got both types of teams intrigued. Some teams see him as simply a rush end. Obviously, he can do that, and he can really get after the quarterback. I think he would be a great fit for a 3-4 type team. He does have the ability to drop back and cover and play with his hand up. He could fit either scheme, but I'd love to see him land on a 3-4 type team. Rev, do you think that's his best chance of succeeding? And maybe he could flourish in a little bit of a different role playing with his hand off the ground.
You know, yeah, I agree with the coach. I think maybe he might develop into a good situational type of pass rusher, you know, but what worries me about him also is, you know, the way he played against the run. I think he got blown off the ball way too often in college, so I view him as that 3-4 type of guy, or maybe even a situational type of player.
All right, guys, moving on and staying within the hybrid position. You know, after that, there's a couple other guys that can also challenge in terms of maybe who's the next best hybrid. You know, we assume it's going to be Hughes, but could one of these juniors emerge maybe? And I'm talking about Thaddeus Gibson out of Ohio State and Jason Worlds. I got to point this out. Going through the Kanban transcripts, Thaddeus was quick to run away from any Vernon Golston comparison, saying he's a very different player than Vernon is. I wonder why he ran away from those comparisons. Justin, we'll start with you. Which junior intrigues you more in terms of upside down the road? Is it Gibson, the Buckeye out of the Ohio State University, or is it Jason Worlds out of Virginia Tech?
I'm going to go as far as Thaddeus Gibson. I mean, just what he was able to do as far as at the combine and his pro day, and as far as the just the freakish type, you know, athletic numbers that he was able to put up. And he had some production there at Ohio State. Not to the level that you really would want to see as a guy who, you know, who you'd say, okay, we'll take him in the first round. But a guy to me who, you know, when we came in this process and when he came out as a junior, everyone was thinking, hey, third, fourth, you know, round type pick. Now he's put himself into the second, third type, you know, for just with his workout numbers, his ability at the NFL combine, and a lot of teams go into this 3-4 type defense. So, I mean, he's a guy to me who's going to be probably a second round pick when it's all said and done, just because everybody's looking for those, that next hybrid type pass rusher. You know, we saw, you know, Lamar Woodley be a, you know, a second round type guy. You know, to me, he fits in that second round late, you know, middle to late second round pick, because he's a guy to me who's going to be a very good pass rusher at the next level.
All right, Justin, I asked you this about Kendall. I'm going to ask you again about Thaddeus Gibson, 243 pounds, a little light in the pants. No, I mean, he's got to bulk up if he's going to be a pass rusher and going up against NFL offensive linemen.
Oh, I think, you know, to me, he's got to put on 7 to 10 pounds there to really to be able to get to his full potential as a tight pass rusher. And then obviously a lot of these guys, you know, want to, you know, trim down a little bit, get far as cut up for when they, you know, they do the height weight and you're down there into the eyeball test, and then you want to run a good 40. So you get a little bit light, you know, and then when you get back into, you know, training and doing that kind of stuff, when you're not doing combine specific training, you go ahead and gain some weight, get back into that type playing shape. And that's what I expect, you know, Thaddeus Gibson to do.
Rev, how about Mr. Jason Worlds and that 4.55 speed we saw at the pro day? That's something that's got to intrigue people coming off the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about Worlds, when you compare him to Gibson, he's got a little bit more size also. He's closer to that 260 range. You know, the thing that I love about Worlds, I think he gives you a lot of potential. He was commonly known as the best condition athlete on his team during his days at Va Tech. He's got the footwork, the burst to consistently blow by tackles on the edge. He lays devastating hits on the quarterback. He employs a pretty spin move, but also has the speed and agility to pursue plays on the backside. He knows how to wrap up ball carriers. I think this guy's got it all, and he's a phenomenal leaper, by the way, if you ever saw him jump up and bat balls down. So to me, you know, this is a guy that can only get better at the next level because he's got the work ethic, and he's a serious kid who wants to get better.
And we're talking about a 38-inch vertical leap there from Mr. Jason Worlds in terms of his leaping ability, so he can definitely go up and get the football, you know, almost like a power forward grabbing that rebound.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you like to see. You know, hey, you're not always going to get to the quarterback. Doesn't mean you can't force an incompletion by knocking the ball down. I love to see guys that can do that. Moving on now, who's the best of the rest here? You know, I think we've hit off kind of the consensus top five guys at this position. But, you know, there's a lot of other guys floating out there, guys like Komisi out of Utah, Kevin Bassfeed from Nevada, Antonio Coleman, Justin Cole. Jermaine Cunningham is another one. Rev, who do you like as a potential hybrid here? You know, we're throwing a lot of guys out there that played mostly defensive ends, so we're projecting a lot here.
Yeah, I like guys who bring on every play. I like guys who work hard. I like guys who are in great condition. That's why I'm going to go with Jermaine Cunningham out of Florida. He's a classic edge rusher who's very athletic in space, very light on his feet. He changes directions very well. He takes good angles in pursuit of ball carriers, as lightning quick on stunts, you know, and he does a good job of gaining leverage. The only thing that he needs to work on is he needs to improve his upper body strength, because sometimes when blockers get two hands on him, you know, he has trouble disengaging from that. But, what you know, as I said before, this guy's a hard worker. He stayed in on more plays than any other Florida Gator defensive lineman. So I think that's very promising when you're talking about Jermaine Cunningham.
And, Justin, I'll throw it to you. You know, we get to day, late part of day two in the draft, third round comes around, your top five guys are off the board. Who's the next guy on your list if you're looking for that pass rushing outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme?
To me, as far as it's Antonio Coleman, he's a guy to, you know, didn't have a great senior season, but then got a chance to go to the Senior Bowl and, you know, did a great job, showed as far as his pass rushing ability, showed he could stand up as far as rush the passer. Then he goes ahead and goes to the combine, you know, and does well there. You know, so this is a guy to me who was very disappointing as a defensive end at Auburn as far as his senior season. We expected a lot of, you know, coming in as far as off his junior year, coming into this season. Didn't perform to expectations, but then got into a chance where he could show he could be in, you know, as far as an athlete, you know, stand up and rush the passer. And that's where he's kind of gained momentum. And talking with NFL scouts, they say, hey, he's a guy that's wise enough people's draft boards. You know, could be a third-round pick, but probably more of in the fourth-round type, you know, standpoint there. But he's a guy, to me, who watch. And Auburn always gets great athletes, and they always transitionalize in the NFL pretty well. I expect Antonio Coleman to be pretty far as a dominant pass rusher at the next level.
All right, guys, I'm going to go in a different both of you. I like Comisi out of Utah. You know, he's another kid, 38-inch vertical, so he's got that explosive ability. He played a lot at Utah. If you watched him play, he played often, you know, in the two-point stance. He showed the ability to drop back in coverage. He's definitely raw and needs to improve on his technique overall, but he's got the ability, I think, to be a good pass rusher at the next level as well as a run stopper. He's not just a one-dimensional guy. So I'm a big fan of Mr. Comisi out of Utah as a potential third-round guy and a sleeper in terms of being an outside linebacker. Folks, you're listening to the Draft Digest show here every Sunday morning, here brought to you by NFL Draft Bible and All Access Football, as well as the Fantasy Sports Channel. Go to FSN.FM for all your fantasy sports news. And we want to remind everybody, go to NFLDraftBible.com and sign up for that All Access Football membership, and it is code VIP2010, 50% off for our listeners. So for 50% off, you get the publication, the PDF, our draft recap, our 2011 draft review, college football inside newsletters, 50% off, $20 package, best deal on the web. And for those of you that like Antonio Coleman, we got a piece in the book, you know, speaking to a little bit to Senderic Marks, his former teammate. He gave us some insight on Antonio, them kind of growing up in Tennessee, not having it all, let's say, rooming together in the early days of Auburn, and how they kind of progressed, and now, you know, both of them will be playing in the NFL level. That's some of the stuff we bring you in the book, as well as the interviews, profiles, putting all 32 teams on the clock in terms of draft reviews, team needs, all good stuff. All right, guys, let's just talk linebacker in general. You know, who could be the top linebacker in this draft? I guess, you know, if we got Kindle going 12, he could be in the mix. But, you know, I'm thinking more of a couple other players in terms of who could be the best linebacker, and I'll give the listeners out there a little hint. Justin, I'll throw it to you. You know, how does Sergio Kindle, and I'll throw Sean Weatherspoon out there as well, stack up as potentially the top linebacker in this draft?
Well, I mean, I think for his top linebacker, it goes for Lonnie McClain from University of Alabama, in my opinion. I mean, he's a guy, to me, who could be and go number 10 to the Jacksonville Jaguars, a guy who's just a phenomenal athlete, just a playmaker as far as can make plays all over the field. And that Alabama, the defense, you know, he had made plays from day one, stepping in Tuscaloosa, and a guy to me who's just a dominant player who's going to be a big-time linebacker at the next level. Obviously, I like Weatherspoon. He's a guy to me who's rising up, and to me, I've got him 15th to the New York Giants. So I like all those three linebackers that we've talked about today. I think all go before the 15th overall pick.
Hey, Justin, let me ask you this. You know, I've also been a huge, huge Sergio. I mean, I keep saying Sergio Kindle, Rolando McClain fan. I did realize I made that mistake, by the way. Since day one at Alabama, you know, I remember asking Darren McFadden about him a couple years ago, and he was really impressed with him as a true freshman playing on the field. He's gotten better each year, not just, you know, in terms of his production, but his leadership. He's known so much as a coach on the field. My you know, I'm a huge, huge fan as well. My one question to you would be, how much better is he a fit in a 3-4 defense? You know, because he's got that great bulk. He doesn't necessarily run as well as some of the top Mikes in the NFL. So is there a big drop-off, you think, in his production if he played in a 4-3 defense as opposed to the 3-4 that he's excelled so well in at Alabama?
No, because I think the biggest thing is when you look at it as far as him and what he can do, I think he can play in either defenses. And I think the biggest thing is he's a great athlete, and he, like you said, he's got instincts, he's a coach on the field. And when we're really looking at it, you got some of those, I mean, John Henderson there with the Jacksonville Jaguars, you got some big defensive tackles that can protect him, allow him to make plays from sideline to sideline. So to me, he's a guy who can, who fits neither defense. Yes, he did excel at Alabama's, you know, in the 3-4 there at Bama. But a guy, to me, who can be a Brian Urlacher as far as Mike linebacker in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of his biggest strengths is his versatility. He's a guy that can line up outside, a guy who can line up inside, a guy that could blitz. I think he brings a lot of those qualities to the table. So whether 3-4 or 4-3, I think McClain's going to be an impact player.
All right. I mean, I can't disagree with you guys, but I just think, you know, if you're building a 3-4 linebacker, you're building Rolando McClain, and I'd love to see him stay in that system, not to say he wouldn't flourish in another. Rev, what's your take on Sean Witherspoon, the linebacker there from Missouri? He's another guy that's known for his versatility. You know, most likely if he plays in a 3-4, it's outside, but some people think – I mean, 4-3, it's outside, but some people think he might be able to move inside in a 34 defense. What's your take on Witherspoon and where he might go in this draft?
Well, I think he definitely has the ability to be a first-round pick. You know, whether he goes 15 or 25 is irrelevant to me because I think he is a first-round pick. The thing with him is that he's got the quickness, the instinct. He has the instincts to be an impact-type linebacker. He's always around the football. But, you know, the thing that worries me a little bit about him, he wasn't that same player that he was in his third year as a senior because he played at a heavier weight. He played at about 250 pounds. I think he's much better at 240 as he showed at the Senior Bowl. He's got great range, great closing speed. They're both superb. And as I said, in that Senior Bowl, he really impressed me in coverage where he did a great job of covering Dexter McCluster like a glove. He later recorded an interception by positioning himself perfectly under the intended receiver. Put this guy behind a solid defensive line and just watch him fly around and make explosive plays. And the other thing he needs to watch out for, especially as a rookie, he needs to talk a little less and listen a little bit more to his elders. But other than that, I think he's got great potential.
I was going to ask you about that. I was actually on a Baltimore show two Sundays ago, and I'm going to be on there again today this morning at 11:20. And they brought up Witherspoon as kind of a replacement for Ray Lewis. And part of the reason they brought him up was because of that, you know, boisterous personality. He could potentially replace a Ray Lewis, not just as a top tackler, but as kind of the focal point and the rallying point of a defense.
Yeah, that's true. But you have to produce to be that type of vocal leader. And the other thing I've been hearing from a lot of scouts out there is that they're actually turned off by the fact that he just not stop yapping all the time. So, look, if he goes out there, he proves himself, and he plays like Ray Lewis, then he could talk all he wants. But as a rookie, he's got to listen to his elders, and he's got to learn before he could, you know, stand up and make big speeches and talk trash or whatever else he wants to do.
Justin, what are your thoughts? Should linebackers be seen and not heard?
No. You know, I'm a guy who likes the talkers. I think that's, you know, because the thing is, it's about confidence. And so if you've got the confidence to go ahead and talk the talk, you got to walk the walk or you're going to shut up. The guy's going to make you not talk anymore. If you're getting beat down, you just can't talk anymore or the teams will shut you up. I mean, if you watch all the guys that the best trash talkers in the NFL or in the NBA, they usually can back it up because they learn that they can't talk anymore if they can't play, and they'll be out of the league. So to me, Witherspoon, you got to be that. You want that vocal leader. You want a guy, an inspirational, you know,
guy that's going to be emotional, because that's what the game of football is. It's about emotion. It's about passion. And that's why I like what Weatherspoon. He's a guy, to me, he doesn't do it in a negative way. It's always positive. And, you know, I think, yeah, some scouts maybe be turned off about it. Some scouts like it. I mean, some teams, some defensive coordinators want a guy who's going to be confident and stuff like that, especially on defense. You want a guy who's going to be confident, going to be able to go downhill and make tackles and make plays, and that's what I think Spoon does.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Draft Digest show here this morning. We have confirmation, just got a text. Darrell Washington will be joining us in about 10 minutes or so, 10:40 Eastern time, the high-rising, speedy linebacker from TCU. But before we get to him, we got to talk about a little linebacker you on a linebacker show. All right, Rev, I'm going to start with you. I got to start with the Rev here when we're talking Nittany Lion football. And, you know, I had the pleasure of speaking to one of the greats, Jack Ham, not just in Penn State history, but, you know, football history at any level. You know, arguably one of the top linebackers in the history of all time. I'm going to read you a quote that he gave about Mr. Navarro Bowman. I want to let you know what you think. He said he's a complete linebacker. He's got plays hard against the run, great against the pass, and I'm sure Navarro Bowman will be a very high pick in the NFL draft. How quick you are in the first 10 yards and how quickly you are reading a play is more important than a 4.7 whatever 40-yard dash he was at the scouting combine. He has that quick burst and reads plays very well, a very instinctive linebacker. Rev, what's your take on Bowman? He did improve that 40-yard dash time to 4.66 at the pro day. Do you agree with the great Jack Ham's analysis there?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, look, his 40 numbers in Indy might have been a little subpar, but in real-time action, Bowman is quick, he's agile, he routinely fights through blocks, he fills in gaps, he makes solid, secure wrap-up tackles, and he's pretty fluid in space. When you watch him in coverage, he looks like a safety out there. So to me, he's got all those qualities. He's definitely a three-down linebacker.
Justin, what's your take on Bowman? I know his stock has slipped a little bit, but do you still think he could be a top-flight NFL player?
Well, I think the biggest thing is he's going to be a guy who we all thought was going to be a first-round pick when he decided to come out as a junior. Now we've done some more research on him, and he's a guy, to me, who's not a first-round pick. He's going to be probably a mid- to late second-round pick, but he's a guy, to me, who could come in and take that, hey, attitude, hey, I didn't go where I wanted to go, and just really work harder, because I think he needs to get bigger and stronger and just be a better overall football player. You know, there's some question marks as far as off the field stuff that some teams have been disappointed with, as far as maybe some of his work ethic, likes to go out a little bit too much. So he needs just to be able to come back, reel it in, and do what he's been able to do that's made him such a great linebacker and had his years at Penn State. I think he could be a very good player at the next level.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's somebody that's going to end up being a steal. Maybe we overrated him a little bit early on, myself in particular, but I think he's one of those guys that's almost gone from maybe overrated to underrated now. I still think he could play football. And I asked Jack a little bit about that off-the-field stuff, and he said, hey, he felt like he really improved in terms of his character and his behavior during his time at Penn State. He thinks, being under Paterno definitely helped a lot. The other big name out of Penn State is Mr. Sean Lee, who obviously, was – one of the top linebackers, a couple of years ago, pre-injury, had a monster season, looked like he was going to follow in the line and look like a future first-round pick. Jack said, when I spoke to him, he's probably going to get knocked down a bit because of his knee injury. But if you watch him play on tape the last five or six games of this year, you'll see Sean Lee being as productive as he was when people were touting him as the number one pick. Rev, how much has Sean Lee come back from that injury?
I think he's come back. I think he's proven that he's a heady player. He anticipates plays, doesn't miss many tackles. He does need to get stronger, but he's a versatile guy. He's smart. He's coachable. The only thing that worries me about, and you alluded to this, is the fact that he's very injury prone. That's why you have a medical staff. That's why you check him out, see if that knee's 100% sound, because on the field, this guy makes plays. I think he's going to be a good pro.
Hey, Justin, what's your take? Where do you think Sean Lee goes, and how much does the injury factor in his draft stock?
Well, like Rev said, I mean, the medical doctors are going to do, and if he checks out medically, I think what he's done, not only is at the end of the season at Penn State, but combine his pro day, he's a guy, to me, who's going to get drafted higher than Navarro Bowman, will be an early second-round pick, and could be, you know, one of those guys who people are going to be very intrigued with in that second round, because obviously we've got, you know, that, you know, the second round will be on Friday, so teams will be able to restock their board, and he might be one of those first couple guys that come off the board in the second round.
All right, and let's not forget quickly, you know, I know you saw him play closely, Justin. How about Josh Hull, the third linebacker coming out of PSU, you know, really somebody who worked his way into a prospect role?
Oh, yeah, I mean, from a walk-on to now a guy who went to the NFL Combine, who played at the TVN, a guy, to me, who's going to be a, you know, seventh-round, you know, priority free agent type guy, but could be a guy who could just play in the league just because of his work ethic, special teams, and be a very good, productive middle linebacker in a 4-3 defense.
Yeah, I think Hull is a very disciplined defender. He reads his keys, puts himself in position to make tackles. I think he's a very underrated linebacker in this draft.
All right, folks, you're listening to the NFL Draft Digest show brought to you by NFL Draft Bible. Don't forget, go to our site. You can listen to a bunch of interviews we have, including the ones I mentioned, Dabo Swinney, as well as Jack Ham. That's one of, you know, the favorite interviews that I've done myself. Also, recently, I spoke to Houston Nutt from Mississippi. He broke down some props coming out of there, as well as Marcus Stroud from the Buffalo Bills. We also have interviews with Eric Berry, John Skelton, and Pat Pascal up on the website right now that have been posted in the last day or two. So don't forget, go to NFLDraftBible.com every day. Get the player spotlights. Get the latest news on the NFL draft. All right, guys, let's you know, jump back to the outside linebackers. Not necessarily 3-4, but, you know, any kind of outside linebacker. Justin, you know, there's a bunch of guys out there that we could talk about, whether it's Eric Norwood or McElroy from Texas, Rennie Curran, Dakota Watson, Perry Riley. Who's your next best guy in terms of an outside linebacker?
Well, I would like Eric Norwood, a guy to me who could play both in a 4-3 and the 3-4 type of, you know, defense, because he's a fluid pass rusher. Now, he needs to work on his coverage and as far as his drops, both as man-to-man and in the zone, as far as if he's going to be a 4-3 outside linebacker, excuse me. But to me, he's a guy, a very good athlete, thought about coming out as a junior, decided to come back for a senior year, which I thought was a good decision, was a playmaker at South Carolina. I think will be a playmaker at the next level, probably a second-round pick when it's all said and done, but to me, a very good football player.
Rev, how about you? Who's your next best guy in terms of outside linebacking prospects?
Yeah, I like a couple of guys here. I like Roderick McElroy. You know, he didn't look too smooth out there in the Senior Bowl, but as a Longhorn, you know, he displayed nice burst to finish off plays. He plays with good awareness and is strong enough to hold his ground against blockers in the running game. Doesn't have elite speed, but should be better suited to play in a 3-4 scheme. And then the other guy I like is the Georgia Bulldog, Rennie Curran, kind of like a smaller linebacker at about 5'10", 225. But to me, he's a sideline-to-sideline defender with great lateral movement. He keeps his shoulders square to the line. He makes some bone-rattling hits. And in addition to all that, he times his blitzes very well, and he does have a little bit of special teams experience, which should come in handy.
Let me ask you, how about the people that say Rennie Curran, yeah, great college numbers, didn't really see much improvement from him as much as I would have liked from his freshman year. You know what I mean? He was very, very productive as a freshman. What about people who say he's too small, Rev? He's just too small.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but we've seen a lot of smaller linebackers have an impact in the NFL. I think it all depends on, you know, the defensive line that he plays behind. If he plays behind those big guys and he has those gaps, you know, to insert himself and make plays, he's got the speed and the explosiveness to be a factor, I think.
I didn't know you back in those days, but I could picture you being a big Sam Mills fan.
Yeah, I that's the guy I thought of when I was evaluating Rennie Curran. Absolutely. He's definitely that type of guy.
Justin, let me ask you about Eric Norwood. Very early on in his career, played defensive end in South Carolina, always an impact pass rusher. Why isn't he really considered, you know, a 3-4 prospect? Why do most people view him as a 4-3 outside linebacker?
Because I don't think he's got that size, you know, the height, weight that you really look at when we're talking about, and those long arms, when we're talking about a 3-4 outside linebacker. And I think the thing is he's shown the ability to drop into coverage and to do some things as an outside linebacker, the things people feel like his value would be better, you know, as a guy who could be more of an all-around type outside linebacker than strictly a 3-4 pass rushing linebacker. But I think he could do either. But I think when it's all said and done, he'll be drafted by a 4-3 team and be that strong side linebacker, because that's what you want, because he's good against the run, he's good against the pass, and he's a good pass rusher. So with those qualities don't come around a lot, especially when we're talking about an impact-type player there like Eric Norwood's been at his college career at South Carolina.
Hey, Rev, back to Roderick McElroy from Texas. You know, very instinctive guy, known as a leader, you know, but people are a little disappointed in athleticism. You know, do you think he has enough there in terms of those instincts and know-how to kind of make up for that?
Yeah, I think so. Look, he doesn't have elite speed, doesn't have elite athleticism, but this guy is a player. And that's why I said I think he's ideal for that 3-4 type of scheme.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Draft Digest here on this Sunday morning. We are now 25 days, 8 hours, and 50 minutes away from the start of the NFL Draft. It's actually getting closer and closer by the minute.
I can feel it.
All right, and we have our guest on the line now, Mr. Darryl Washington out of TCU. There's not many players that can cover the former Horn Frog. Good morning. Good morning, Darryl. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, no problem. Nice to have
you. You know, I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. Also with me today is Ralph Mancini and Justin Van Fulpen. Before we throw it to the guys, Darryl, I got a couple for you. Let's start with a kind of a lighthearted question, something we like to ask a lot of the guys. What was the strangest question you got at the NFL Scouting Combine from the NFL teams?
The strangest question... I'm not sure if that was the strangest question. Maybe it would have been, are you tough? And I think that was like a strange question, because I think for the game of football, both mentally and physically, you have to be tough. And I just thought that was kind of awkward, more than a strange question. I thought it was awkward. So that's probably been like one of the questions.
Okay. I was thinking more of the line of, are you a cat or a dog? One of those weird type questions. You didn't get any of those then?
Oh, no, sir. No, I didn't get one of those.
All right. I'm going to throw a quote at you. I spoke to the Air Force offensive line coach, Clay Hendricks, during the season, and I brought you up to him during the year, and he said, I think the last 3 years that I've been here, TCU has had great defenses, and I think they've had 4 or 5 kids in the last few years, linebackers that are in the NFL. In my opinion, he, meaning you, Darryl Washington, is right there at the very top of them. He's just a guy that's there, that there's not a thing he can't do. They'll rush him. He can run side to side. He can defend the pass. He's physical. He's about as good a football player as there is. Darryl, let me ask you about, not only living up to the expectations of a TCU defender, but you as well as Jerry Hughes setting the bar even higher for the next group.
You have to live up to the expectations. All the hype is there. People are talking about you every day. Wondering what the next linebacker is going to be, or the next player coming out of TCU going to look like. And all I try to do, and me and Jerry try to do, is prepare ourselves well enough for the season. And it starts in the off season. So I think for these group of guys that's coming in after us, those guys before us, we kind of just set the bar. And I think those guys are motivated by that, and we were motivated by the guys that went to the draft last season. So, I think just living up to the hype and living up to your expectations.
Yeah. Hi, Darryl. Ralph Mancini here. You are one of the bigger, faster inside linebackers in the draft. Why do you think you can come in and make a splash as a rookie right from the get-go? What do you offer an NFL team, in your opinion?
Well, I think the experience. I mean, I think more the knowledge of the game and you know, explosive, and you know, just I think I can come in right away and just, you know, produce, be a high production to the team. And my thing is, I love to compete and I love to play the game of football. So when you put those two together with the way I play the game of football, you know, I think I can help a lot of teams out.
And also, you know, how does a linebacker go about becoming an instinctive playmaker? Where do those instincts come from? Is it all about the hard work in the film room? What's your secret?
Well, it comes with a lot of hard work in the film room. I think the film room is most important when it comes to football and, you know, just really understanding the game of football itself. And my thing is just preparing well enough to make sure I'm watching enough film and make sure that I'm studying my opponents each and every day. I watch film. So it's really all about preparation when it comes down to it. And then going out there playing a game of football and executing.
Hey, Jerry, Justin Van Fulpen here. Hey, I'm sorry, Daryl. Wanted to see, what do you think that you really need to work on to be the type of player you want to be at the next level? What's your biggest weakness that you want to improve on, you know, as far as at the NFL level?
Well, I think a lot of teams talk a lot about you know, my strength and building more strength, and I will agree with that. You know, also adding a little bit more bulk. You know, my body is real lean. You know, but I think just putting on a little bit more bulk will be, you know, a big thing for those guys to see. You know, like I said, I can easily be up to 235, 240, and my body will, you know, eventually get to that size. So I think just more strength, you know, building more strength and bulk.
Gotcha.
Hey, Daryl, this is Ralph again. Looking back at your college career, what was it like to have to wait your turn to finally start in your senior year? You know, you had guys like Jason Phillips playing ahead of you in your earlier years. How was that like? What was the experience like?
Well, it was, you know, definitely a long experience. I mean, I came in at TCU as a, you know, true freshman in the spring of 06. And just playing behind those guys really, I think, really helped my game, you know, because it gave me an opportunity to really look back and observe and watch these guys who in the league right now, and, you know, just kind of sit back and just wait my turn, not being impatient about, you know, the whole outcome of me playing. My thing is to compete and come in and play, whether it's special teams or whether it's getting on the field on defense. So I'm just a competitor. And those guys really helped me out, both on the field and off the field. So that was a good deal.
Hey, Daryl, you brought up special teams. Let me ask you, how much fun is it just to line up and sprint down the field as fast as you can and try to knock somebody's head off?
I mean, when you love the game of football, football is a violent sport, and, you know, it's nothing better than going down there, making a tackle, or a tackle for loss, or going down there making a play on special teams and, you know, determining the whole game by that one special team play. So every play, you know, you think about special teams is not important, but, you know, really it is. You know, you win the special teams battle as well as the defense and the offense, and, you know, you have yourself a victory. So special teams is just, you know, I've always loved to go down there and, you know, just make a play, just take on a challenge.
I know coaches don't devalue the importance of special teams. Is that something that you get asked a lot about when you speak to these NFL teams?
Well, they ask me a lot about just playing the game, playing the LB position. But they also do ask me, you know, do I love playing special teams? And I tell them, well, that's why I made my mark at TCU. You know, I came in and played a lot of special teams, and my sophomore year I blocked 3 punts, and then my junior year, I was fourth on the team in tackles, and my senior year I had 109 tackles. But, I mean, my mark was made from just playing special teams, and, you know, you have to find your mark somewhere. That's what I did.
All right, Dal, before we let you go, can you let us know if you have any workouts or visits that you have already done or anything coming up?
I'm supposed to be meeting with the Titans sometime next week. I've had a couple of workouts dealing with Atlanta and a few other teams, but I have a few coming up. I have a few coming up sometime next week and the week after that, and you know, I'm looking forward to it.
The listeners out there want to know, man, who you've eaten with. We got NFL fans listening. They want to know if you might be coming to a town near them.
Well, we hope so, but I'll try to keep that undisclosed for right now. But like I said, I have a couple teams, a lot of teams really interested in me, and really want to work with me. So it'll be fun.
All right, Darryl, we'll keep it on the down low for now then. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning, and good luck come draft weekend.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, sir.
And that is Darryl Washington, who not only is a hard hitter, but you can't crack him under pressure either.
Yeah, and he's a very humble guy too, but an extremely talented player, a guy whose stock has risen dramatically over the past couple of months, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a guy we liked a lot, heading into the year. And he just, if you liked him, he backed it up with his play and I think has improved his stock even more and more as time went on in terms of the whole draft process. All right, staying on that theme of Mr. Darryl Washington and the potential inside linebackers, I think we all like Rolando McClain as the number one guy. I wonder if there's a challenger there in terms of who's going to be the number two guy. Guys, once again, I know, you aren't always the biggest fans of stats, but, these do kind of pop out. You, as sophomores, Darryl Washington had 32 tackles. Spikes had 131. As juniors, Washington went up to 63, almost doubled his. Spikes went down to 93. As a senior, Washington, 109 tackles. Spikes out of Florida, down to 68. I mean, who would have thought this a year ago, but has Darryl Washington clearly, trumped Spikes, and how far can Spikes fall? Rev, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I don't even think it's close at this point. Darryl Washington is the far better prospect. We're talking about a long-armed, heady defender with incredible speed. He shoots gaps, he wraps up, has a smooth back pedal in his pass coverage, and Darryl Washington is a very intense competitor. There's no reason why he can't be a three-down linebacker in the NFL.
How about you, Justin? I mean, is there any case to be made here for Spikes over Washington? Has Washington made himself the clear-cut number two inside linebacker in your view?
Well, I think so, definitely. I mean, because Billy G, like Rev was saying, he could play all three downs. And that's the thing when you're talking about we're going with the NFL, we're talking about a lot of, as far as pass-first type teams, with the Saints, with the Colts, with the Texans, and you need those linebackers that not only can play the run but also can cover the pass. And he's a guy who's shown the athletic ability, shown the coverage ability, and shown the ability also to play the run. So he's a guy who can stay on the field for all three downs in nickel and dime situations, and that's what you need when we're talking about inside linebackers.
And, and he does have the versatility, I think, as well to, potentially play outside of teams, might be looking for that. One more on Spikes before we move on. I've kind of always felt this about him, even before he ran, an over five in the 40-yard dash. I mean, you shake your head every time you say it. I've always felt he would have been a better fit for a 3-4 defense because he does have pretty good bulk. He is a pretty instinctive guy, and especially now with his lack of sideline-to-sideline speed. Rev, I mean, would you touch him if you were a 4-3 team looking for a Mike that can cover sideline-to-sideline?
Absolutely not. I don't think he has that athleticism, that speed to make plays in space. I wouldn't trust him. And you also have to wonder, he had a couple of great years, some great years with Florida, but, did it help him maybe playing with so many great athletes around him? You have to wonder about that.
All right, folks, it's time for the Draft Bible Draft Digest debate, and it's time for the three and out debate, and we're going to start with Justin, and we've already led into this. Out of the linebackers, which guy has hurt their stock the most in this draft process? Is it Rolando McClain? You know, we heard about the Crohn's disease and didn't work out at the combine. I know a lot of people weren't happy about that. Spikes running his 5.03 or whatever it was now, 40-yard dash. Or Navarro Bowman, you know, who also didn't run well and has some of those off-the-field issues. Justin, who hurt their stock the most?
I think it was Brandon Spikes with the 5-something 40-yard dash, because that basically says he's a two-down linebacker. But let's not kill him. I think he's still going to be a second-round pick. He's still a physical presence in the middle. He can play for still middle linebacker in a 4-3 defense. It's just going to he's going to be a run-stopping, and that's it. He's going to have to be off the field on passing type downs.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think he's going to be a second-round pick. I think he's probably a third-round pick right now. And actually, some people are even talking about him dropping maybe even to the fifth or sixth round. So I think definitely Tequil Spikes takes a hit here.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance. Well, not Tequil Spikes.
Brandon Spikes.
Brandon Spikes. Yeah, I think Tequil still might be fast for the first. Right. Rev, the most underrated middle linebacker, we'll stay at the mic position, is it Washington's Donald Butler, Iowa's Pat Anger, who, by the way, has the best name for a mic linebacker, Jamar Chaney out of Mississippi State, or Darryl Sharpton from the U?
Hey, you know I love, and I say love, Darryl Sharpton. He's a physical enforcer. He fights through traffic. He sheds blocks, wrestles down ball carriers. He's got lateral quickness, ability to take the proper angles when bringing down his opponents, and he's versatile enough to line up either on the strong side or weak side or even in the tackle. So I think this guy's an omnipresent force. I love Darryl Sharpton.
I'm going to go with Donald Butler there from Washington, a guy who could rush the passer, also drop into coverage, you know, could make plays throughout the field. A guy, to me, who's really rising up a lot of people's draft boards, and I like him in the second round.
Well, I know I'm not part of the three and out, but I'm going to have to chime in and say I'm a big fan of Mr. Pat Anger, the linebacker out of Iowa. Very instinctive kid. I love his instincts. And let's not forget about Jamar Chaney, 4.54 speed. I know some people question his recognition skills, but he could definitely fly. Third down, Justin, small school hybrids. Who's your diamond in the rough? You got guys like Arthur Motes, Junior Gallette, Danny Batten, Adrian Tracy. I really think at least one of these guys is going to make an impact in the NFL. Who's your diamond in the rough among the small school hybrids?
Well, I mean, I like Adrian Tracy at William & Mary. He's got long arms. He's a good pass rusher. He can do everything that you want. We're talking about 3-4 outside linebackers, those hybrid guys. And however the four is down in Texas First Nation, he showed a great ability, then went to the combine, then his pro day. I mean, this is a guy who's really rising up people's draft boards, and Adrian Tracy is a guy, to me, we're going to be watching the NFL 3-4 years down the road. We're going to be like, hey, wasn't that, you know, the guy we saw down in Texas First Nation game? And, yeah, that's going to be Adrian Tracy.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Arthur Motes here out of that football factory. James Madison, he was a defensive end in college. I think he has the speed to transition to outside linebacker, the quickness, the explosiveness. He's got all that to knife through the offensive line, make stops behind the line of scrimmage. How he's going to perform in pass coverage is unknown, but I think at the very least he should be a good situational pass rusher with the variety of moves and counters that he has in his arsenal.
All right, I'll throw out there, I'm a Junior Gallette fan, former Temple Owl. I think the kid's got electric speed coming off the edge, so I'm really curious to see how he could potentially translate to a 3-4 outside linebacker. We're closing out the show, folks. Next week we're going to be talking cornerbacks. Hopefully have a couple of more guests on for you in terms of players who are going to be drafted. Justin, this week, big day for Sam Bradford. What's your take here? Is it time for him to solidify himself as a number one overall pick?
Yeah, we got to see as far as, does he have the arm strength? Is he, you know, as far as, and that's the biggest question mark. Is he medically healthy? And does he have the arm strength? If he does that, he'll be the number one pick by the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, I agree. If that shoulder checks out, he's definitely going to be the number one pick. I don't think he should be, but I think he probably is going to be that number one pick.
And, you know, do you think it's the biggest thing is the medical here? I mean, how concerned are you just about him being injury prone, Rev, beyond how he looks today?
It is a concern, and, you know, that's why they have doctors, and that's why you spend 2 to 3 or 4 months evaluating this type of play. It is a concern, no doubt about it.
And how important to you, if you're the franchise, is getting a contract done? Let's say they settle in on him You know, do you really want to get that contract done before draft day?
Get it done as soon as possible because the Rams desperately need a quarterback. You know, you take this type of guy, you want him starting in day one.
Justin, is that a make or break for you, Justin?
I don't think it's a make or break, but I know that the Rams did bring in a number of guys to, as far as talk about the contracts, both Clawson and Bradford and the two defensive tackles. So they want to get a contract done before the draft, just like the Lions got done with Matthew Stafford last year.
All right, folks, we will be with you again next Sunday morning as we get you ready for the NFL draft. I myself will be on in 20 minutes at a Baltimore radio station, WNST, 1570 AM in Baltimore. Go to NFLDraftBible.com, and you can click the link to listen. Talk to you next week, folks.